especially like when you're in a team and there are only like alpha male, no offense, around sitting at the table. It's kind of natural to have the imposter syndrome. I would definitely encourage women to speak up and take confidence, because if you're sitting at that table, it's because you deserve to be sitting at that table and your opinion counts. And so just speak up.
Welcome to Leaders Unplugged. Leaders Unplugged is real talk with the impactful, candid, honest, actionable, and fresh from behind the scenes. Presented to you by IMD and hosted by IMD's president, David Back, and myself, Felix Seltner, founder of Remote Daily. I'm so excited to bring you a very special episode today with three different guests, a former Olympic basketball player, a Japanese strategist in London, and a Swiss energy executive. The one thing they have in common, they all graduated from IMD, but in very different decades. John Hatch graduated in 1990, Kazumi Nakayama in 2015, and Oro Omodrus, who you just heard in the beginning, got her MBA in 2020. And David sat down with all of them at the MBA alumni reunion in Lausanne for an honest, funny, and reflective conversation on what IMD has taught them and how it has shaped them into the leaders they are today. Let's jump right in. Enjoy.
It's great to have you on campus for reunion weekend. So John, why don't we start with you? Do you remember what made you come to IMD and join the class of 1990?
Yeah, I was really looking for a huge traditional movement in life. I had just finished actually playing professional basketball and competing for Canada in a couple of Olympic Games. And so I was looking for that opportunity to combine a whole bunch of things and interject a real transition into my career. And I knew that the class and the whole format around leading was a great opportunity to do just that.
So you got to say a little bit more about basketball, because we talked before and, you know, you didn't just play in the Olympics.
Well, yeah, of course. You know, the fun fact is that I got a chance to guard Michael Jordan in the 84 Olympics in Los Angeles. So yes, that is name dropping at the biggest level in the sporting world.
that's really exciting. And then you came here to IMD. What was that like in 1990? How do you remember it?
You know, that was the first year where the schools were merged. The IMIDE and IMI came together, and as you reminded me, pre-internet.
Yes.
Which we should look back of finally. So it was a lot of coursework and a lot of cases, but you know, I think we were all walking around with big knapsacks full of paper cases, actually.
Kazumi, were you based in Japan when you decided to come here, or were you based?
Actually, I was based in Bangkok back then.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I was supposed to go back to Japan, but I wanted to have more adventure.
Yes.
And therefore, I applied for the company sponsorship program to go to MBAs, and I decided to come to IMD.
And what was that like? Had you been to Switzerland before? Did you know Lausanne?
No, I've never been. Actually, like before that, like I never been to Switzerland or like major European cities. So I've been like more like familiar to American society and then also like some Asian countries. So it was a super new, very new experience for me. So the assessment day was my first time in Switzerland.
Okay, so what are some of the things that you remember of your time on campus? It was 10 years ago when you graduated.
I'm not sure if you know of it, but my husband is actually from same class.
Yes.
So, like for me, like IMD really is like kind of a real integral part of my life now.
Yes.
So, I never expected that when I arrived here, but everybody was very welcoming and it's so international vibe. So I didn't feel like this was the first place to visit or like the first place to live in Western European countries. So it was really, yeah, nice, good vibes back then.
And the two of you have brought your kids to reunion, which is phenomenal.
Yeah.
So next generation,
yes.
Super excited about that. Aurora, you're a member of the class of 2020. We'll talk a little bit about what made that year particularly memorable. But what led you to decide to come to IMD?
Well, as you may know, I'm a very local product from Canton de Vaud, from Lausanne. So as a little girl, I was actually coming every spring to the fun fair, which is right across the street from IMD. And I remember my mom telling me, like, this is IMD. This is like the top, one of the top school in the entire world. And we were so lucky to have it in Lausanne. And I don't know, it stuck with me. And a few years later, I mean, a lot of years later, when I was in a transition as an engineer, it made sense to kind of expand my leadership skills. And as an engineer from EPFL, it made sense to the other good school.
School in Lausanne. Yes.
Exactly. So it made sense to come here.
Fantastic. And of course, you know, you started the program in January 2020. There were a couple of things happening in Asia that most of us didn't think were going to affect us all that much. And then suddenly there's a full-blown pandemic. How do you remember the experience at the time, coming to terms with the world changing very rapidly in front of our eyes?
It was crazy. I mean, in a minute, we were sent back home.
Yeah.
But IMD made everything possible for us to have the best experience even at home. And I remember that we came back on campus in June. We were the first business school in the entire world to be back on campus that year in June. IMD made it happen so we could be there. They split us into two different auditorium. We had plexiglass around us sitting in the class with the mask. IMD made it happen. Yeah.
It was a crazy time. I joined IMD around that time, and I actually contributed a couple of virtual sessions to your class. It was still in the US at the time. And, you know, for me, it really, you know, brought to the surface that sort of commitment to the participants, that entrepreneurial spirit that I think characterizes the institution. But you guys,
exactly.
You know, big compliment to you and your classmates. I mean, you know, this is doing an already challenging MBA under very, very challenging circumstances.
Yeah, and it just makes, I mean, the bonds that you create during the year, like, they're so strong because of what happened, and everyone was basically stuck here in Switzerland, like, not being able to go back home and visit families. So yeah, it just creates something very special for the whole class.
So a stronger bond. Kazumi, how has the alumni community mattered to you since you graduated from the program? Obviously, you know, you have the very sort of deep family links there. You have an alum in your home.
It's indeed. And we often meet with an UK alumni, and then, like, we are helping each other to find a job. Like, you know, some, like, lead, like, some challenges you have in your life, and everybody's really helpful and trying to give them back to the community. Mm-hmm. I really love the part of the IMD, regardless of the class, you are here and try to help. Mm-hmm. That's a mentality that I can't compare because I've never been into other business school, but still I feel like it's a very, very, like, beautiful part of IMD community. Yeah.
As an engineer who experienced this MBA program, what were some of the things that surprised you about the experience? What was unexpected? Did you find that the approach to learning was quite different?
I think for me, what was very interesting and very challenging was the self-development program, the PDE sessions we had, which forces you to, like, really understand who you are, what you want, where you want to go, what are your priorities in life, and which is kind of completely different from what you're going to learn at an engineering school, you know?
And how did that shape you then in your post-MBA career as you embarked on a number of ventures and ultimately ended up...
It really helped me define what kind of leader I want to be. Mm. I mean, I'm confident when I say that today I'm an authentic leader and I provide a secure base for the team I work with. And this is what the kind of skills and competencies that IMD brought me, basically.
And do you notice when you compare yourselves to other colleagues that your approach to leadership, to self-leadership, is different from some of the people you work with?
Yeah, yeah. Definitely. And I find it that when I talk to my classmates, we kind of all have the same approach, you know, and this is very important for us.
I think the breadth of the leadership style that IMD brought to us is really a key difference, I would say, because before IMD, for me, leadership is like some certain style. But here, you're going to learn various types and you will, like, increase your drawer to use.
Yeah.
And then you pick what you think it might work for that moment, mm-hmm. and for people. And then that notion of, like, various types of leadership exist really helps. And then that's the difference between like some leaders from us. That's how I feel.
Okay, so other people you encounter have sort of a single way of approaching challenges.
Yeah, I often see like kind of authoritative ones and like keep going as authoritarian, and then the other may be different, but like only one type of leadership, like that's what people tend to have.
Mm.
And I like what you say about the drawer, because we, IMD gave us some like concrete tools that we can use in our everyday lives, basically. Like, I mean, I was asking my classmates a couple of months ago, like, do you guys remember this exercise we did? It's called the sociogram. You probably know it. So, and I used it at work, and I mean, everyone at work was like, whoa, this is great. This is amazing. Like, where did you get that? So this is the kind of things like we can use in our jobs.
Yeah.
You were nodding, John. Does that resonate?
Yeah, no, I think the experience gave us a level of confidence to lead in different challenges and in different environments. And maybe the red thread over many changes over a long career is that you just seem to be energized by new challenges, new problems. And then you have the humility and the curiosity to go and leverage the process to find the right solutions and make good decisions or informed decisions in important moments. When I left the MBA, I actually went to, my first job was working with four others. We were five of us hired into the same company. They had done a project on campus, and one of the guys had really impressed this particular company, which is one of the world's largest service retailers at the time. They were looking to really change their whole leadership team. So I ended up working with colleagues from IMD in this first job. And shortly thereafter, I actually got transferred to Italy to lead their Italian operation and to take market responsibility. And I always said to my wife and to my colleagues, I said, listen, I got the best job of all. I ended up reporting to one of my peers who actually was himself reporting also to the guy who kicked off the whole project, who was the COO of the company. But I ended up actually as the country manager. So I was actually closest to the customers and actually was actually leading the team, which was actually delivering on the whole promise. And I just thought that was a wonderful way of us actually collectively showing what we had learned and applying it so rigorously to this particular challenge of injecting a whole generational leadership change into this company.
In addition to leadership, self-leadership, having this toolkit, one of the defining features, of course, of the program has been for decades, and it continues, the very global nature of it, the extraordinary diversity of people's backgrounds, but I think also sort of the global outlook on business. How did you experience this? I mean, for the two of you, you know, it was coming to a different country, you know, you grew up here in Lausanne, but all of a sudden you were in this very global environment. I'm curious if you have some reflections on that.
I thought I was quite international before I joined IMD, but here it's like different level. That's how I felt. So like just, I always use this example, but fireworks, like which month do you think of when you hear fireworks? American, 4th of July.
Yes.
British, November, because Guy Fawkes Day. And Chinese people are going to think about Chinese New Year. For Japanese, it's summer. So one word will give you completely different notion. And that was very exciting and interesting for me, like within the class. Like that was a really great experience and then learning for me, like to understand what exactly means to be really international and being cross-cultural. Yeah.
Yeah, I really love the way you say that. You're right, you think of the international environment and you're getting an international experience, but you're actually getting a global experience and you're getting it injected with a level of intensity which you don't expect. The one advice I would give to somebody thinking about coming here would be you have no idea of how that opens up your perspectives. And you have no idea how that network is immediately a sort of global group of friends. And that you kind of only get when you experience it.
As you mentioned, 2020 was a really special year. And every time I talk about that year, I say that for me, it felt like I traveled all around the world in 2020, even though we were stuck here in Switzerland, because all the different, I mean, we were stuck, we were in our homes, and like you get to know, to understand the different cultures that are in the room with you. And this is fantastic. Yeah.
And we're recording this the day after And you may have seen that on the news, the Trump administration revoked Harvard's right to issue visas. And, you know, let's hope that that doesn't stand. But it is so hard to imagine doing a top MBA program with only people from your country, right? I mean,
it's insane, I would say.
And it's not just about the international students, but it's about how much richer the conversation is with people from all parts in the world.
It takes away a big part of the MBA program, definitely.
So, you know, you already said you were sort of beginning to talk a little bit about advice. So with the benefit of, you know, having spent time here, you know, then having had very successful careers and you're at different stages of your careers, do you have some advice for your pre-MBA self? Are there things that you would do differently or things that you would tell yourself to pay more attention to or to invest the time differently? Does anything come to mind?
Oh, yeah, lots of things. we don't have time for that list. But I think there's a couple of things that I definitely would advise myself to do more of. I think there's an opportunity to listen a lot more. Mm-hmm. You know, again, just back to this idea that we have an opportunity to have to leverage the collective experience and perspectives of a class cohort and a wider community too, and be more proactive in reaching out and connecting with that and continuing to look for opportunities to, you know, inject continual learning into it. And then always remember, you've got your place in the room. You're often in the room with what appears to you always a room which is full of people much smarter than you. But your perspective also counts. So despite the fact that you're often humbled by those people, you know, give your point of view and make sure you continue to do that over time.
Yeah, I hear that trying to be humble and listen, but really like articulate yourself really well is really key. And then maybe like being Asian or Japanese, I'm often not to talk much about myself or what I'm thinking. And back then, like before I met you, I was more like so. And then looking back, my experience, my talk, my thinking, my feeling matters to other people, and then also can bring some value. And people tend to forget about it, I think. And I often forget about it. So like, that will be my advice to myself.
How did you discover that? I mean, I'm fascinated by this. This sort of my point of view, my experience, my perspective has value and matters. It sounds like that was a discovery process.
Yeah, it was. I think in the very beginning, I observed a lot, listened a lot, and I learned a lot. And sometimes I talk with my classmate and like, bar or something.
Yeah.
And because of beer, I talk a lot. And they say like, oh, that's a really interesting perspective. I've never thought of that. And then like, why don't you say that in class?
Yeah.
And then like, yeah, but like, I thought like everybody knows this. And like, I don't want to sound silly saying this. So then he goes, you should talk about it. Doesn't matter what other people think. If you think that's right, then just speak up. And then that kind of episode keep going on and on. So I said, like, okay, maybe sometimes matters, right? And yeah, so I think that's the experience I had here.
This so resonates with me. One of the very first papers, I think it may have been the first paper that I wrote in college in the U.S. So I grew up in Germany, went to the U.S. for college. I wrote a summary of the articles that I was supposed to take a position on. And, you know, I got it back, and the professor had written on the front page, we want to know what you think. Mm-hmm. And the you was underlined. And I'll never forget because, you know, I was like a freshman in college. Why were they interested in what I thought? You know, I've just gotten here. So you had a similar experience of realizing people wanted to know what you think.
Yeah, it was really very eye-opening.
Yeah.
And then especially in, I think it's a cultural thing as well. Japan, Asia, like you're not really like speaking out what you think, but like maybe it's not the way the other country operates. And then also like people here to listen and learn each other. That's a premises, which I really didn't understand back then, I think. So I've noticed like, I'm not contributing to the class if I'm not speaking out. Mm-hmm. That was a really the takeaway I got. back then.
Wonderful. How about you?
It does resonate. But I think it's not only cultural, it's also like as women,
and potentially.
Especially like when you're in a team and there are only like alpha male, no offense, around sitting at the table. I mean, it's kind of natural to have the imposter syndrome. And so, yeah, I would definitely encourage women to speak up and like takes confidence, because if you're sitting at that table, it's because you deserve to be sitting at that table, right, and your opinion counts. And so just like you said, speak up.
Yeah.
I want to ask both of you, because one of the things that you have in common across 30 years is that you're working in the sustainability space. You're on the board of a circular economy company. You work very much, even prior to Romand Energy, you're working in the sustainability space. There's so much pushback right now, and so many of the headlines are negative, and how the current environment is just such a big setback for the important work to reduce the environmental impact of what we're doing. How do you see that, here in Switzerland, through your work with this company that you're on the board of?
I mean, it's there's no way around the energy transition. We have to do it. We have to go for it, whether we want it or not. And I mean, everything that is happening right now just shows you how important it is. There was a blackout a couple of days ago in Portugal and Spain.
Yes.
Massive flood in the south of France just 2 days ago. And this is all happening because of this energy transition. It's not free. It costs money. But I mean, if you want to go and eat at a good restaurant, then you pay for it as well. So why don't you pay for the energy transition? And I think it's important that people understand. And unfortunately, people are going to understand when they see the kind of effects that it has on our lives. And even in Switzerland, I mean, who thought you would have flood and stuff like that in Switzerland? But now it does happen. And I mean, we have to work towards a better system.
So policy may change, but science is science and economics is economics. How do you think about it, John?
No, I'm very optimistic. I just think that we're going to be faced with a generational change, which is just going to hold us to account much differently than what we're currently being pressured. I still think that the current environment is pushing back the potential. Some things have went too fast for some to get on board with, but the next generation will go much faster and be more determined than we are. I've got